Hour of the Kevin Miller Show is brought to you by MinutemanRx.com. American families, American veterans, taking care of Americans. Fighting for America.
The federal agents informed the crowd that if they kept advancing, they would open fire on the crowd.
It was scary to think that shots could be fired. It definitely was scary. Everyone was thinking, could this be another Ruby Ridge? Could this be another Waco?
Fighting for Idaho.
We're starting to realize that we have a government with unlimited power.
The BLM come to decimate us and to reduce us to absolute despotism.
Fighting for you.
More than Kevin, I just wanted to take an opportunity to thank you for real journalism.
Kevin, I just wanted to thank you for going to Nevada and getting the truth to us.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning.
You're the only talk show that I really listen to.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And good morning, K Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. We appreciate it. Phone numbers, you know them, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Joining us now from Judicial Watch, our great friend Chris Farrell. Chris, good morning.
Great to be on with you. How are you today?
You know, I'm in awe of what you guys have accomplished.
Thank you very much.
So take us to this. I go back to the release. The government couldn't do it. The media didn't want to do it, but you did it. Tell us about the discovery concerning the Benghazi emails, the Ben Rhodes email, where, in fact, it was determined that the talking points would be changed.
Yeah, I mean, to be very frank, what this really boils down to is just tenacity. We don't give up and we don't stop. So there's a lot to be said for A, showing up, and B, not quitting, right? So if you do those two things, a lot of good things happen, and that's the case here. We filed this FOIA request. They had blown us off. We sued them. We got a court to set a production schedule. They started producing records to us. And then it's really a matter of fine-tooth comb, analysis and examination. And once we got this latest batch of documents, it became very clear to us that although they were trying desperately, frantically, to hide information, that with the proper analysis and comparing and contrasting, it was clear that Rhodes, based upon his email, was orchestrating a cover-up that reached all the way into the White House.
Chris Farrell joining us from Judicial Watch. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Chris, can you give us some background for folks listening at 580 KIDO that may not be following it as much as they should? This is a blockbuster, monumental move that should have political, social, and possible criminal ramifications. If you could, give us some background of what these emails mean, why the discovery was so important.
Sure. The White House, we now have documentation from their emails, right? Their State Department's communications with the White House discussing the attack in Benghazi. They knew very, very clearly within minutes of the attack occurring that it was not some phony protest. It had nothing to do with any video, but that it was an organized, armed, well-planned terror attack on the compound of Benghazi. They knew within minutes of the attack that they had both people killed in action and also missing, that the ambassador they couldn't find because they tried to go in and rescue him, and then the terrorists had gotten hold of him and taken him away. That all these facts were known to them very, very early on. And that there's an orchestrated campaign, it appears run by Ben Rhodes out of the National Security Council, to fabricate a phony storyline, one that didn't even match the storyline the CIA was ginning up, what Mike Morrell, the acting director of the CIA, was constructing and fabricating for Congress. And Rhodes, who's the National Security Council strategic communications guy, and also, surprise, surprise, brother of the president of CBS News, was busy in the White House coming up with their talking points or with their storyline. And in this case, there's an email that specifically says to shift the focus away from the actual terror attack because they didn't want it to be seen as a policy failure, as their failure pinned on them, that they wanted to create this phony narrative about a video. So that's what this is all about. And this is their documentation, their records, their email. You can see all the addressees and all the CCs and the timing and the sequence of the events. And it's all documented in black and white.
And we all have that thanks to our friends at Judicial Watch. When you, when your folks and you, Chris, got the information, and again, I couldn't believe when I saw that. First, I mean, a couple weeks ago, you have the disclosure that Lois Lerner is working with the Eric Holder crime-fighting attorney general's office to criminalize political speech and thought and activity. And now this, you have folks saying on one hand, this is the smoking gun. On the other, you have Carney and the crew saying we're politicizing this. We also have this comment, and you being a stand-up, straight-shooting kind of guy, had this from Fox News. We'll get your reaction momentarily.
According to the emails and the timeline, sure. The CIA circulates new talking points after they've removed a mention of Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
And then at 6:21, the White House, you,
me,
add a line about the administration warning of September 10th of social media reports calling for demonstrations. True?
I believe so.
Did you also change attacks to demonstrations in the talking points?
Maybe. I don't really remember.
You don't remember?
Dude, this is like 2 years ago. We're still talking about the most mundane process.
Dude, it is the thing that everybody is talking about.
We're talking about the process of editing talking points. That's what bureaucrats do all day long.
The key part is...
Your producers edit scripts multiple times.
The key part is attacks to demonstrations.
Yeah.
Did you do that?
No. What is the question? Did I edit attacks?
The CIA talking points... It was edited from attacks to demonstrations.
No, Michael Morales testified about what he changed and what was changed in those emails and the whole process of that.
But the talking points went through the public affairs people.
Yeah,
which is kind of unique.
These are the most well understood and discussed talking points in the history of talking points.
Your reaction, Chris Farrell.
Well, I mean, whoever made the decision to put that person on television is a moron. Talk about unqualified, unprepared, with this arrogant, snide, glib delivery. You can see the contempt, literally, you can see the contempt that person has for the American public. And the off-the-cuff manner, it is so offensive. It is so arrogant. It's disgraceful, and I think it's a great representation of the Obama administration's position and feeling concerning the American public. That is Exhibit A of the administration's position, their outlook on the average American citizen.
Well, and this is troubling when you think about this is a lower-level guy, so you wonder what the focus is at the upper levels where Hillary Clinton's saying, what difference does it make?
Correct. I mean, they simply don't give a damn, and they believe that any questioning of them, first of all, is beneath them. How dare you? And then even if they are questioned, well, it really doesn't matter because we're doing whatever the hell we damn well please anyway. It is so arrogant. It is so over the top and so disconnected from any real accountability or any sense of public service. Or even any respect for the four Americans who are dead. I mean, this is nothing more than a bad publicity nuisance for them. They have no appreciation for the moral and human consequences of what they're doing. None.
Chris Farrell joining us from Judicial Watch. We'll have more clips for you to sound off on. Actually, this is from this week. And again, if it hadn't been for Judicial Watch, judicialwatch.org, we would have never known about this email from Rhodes. Let's take a listen to David Plouffe.
There's a very loud, delusional minority that's driving our politics, that's in control of the Republican Party. There's no conspiracy here at all.
I love how he labels people that want to know what happened to the four dead Americans delusional.
Yeah, I mean, again, how dare you question us? How dare you catch us in a lie is what it really is. Because, if you're telling the truth, you don't need two sets of talking points, do you?
How did you get this? You're saying tenacity, but Where were the true believers in Congress? Where were, you know, where was Daryl Issa? Where were all these other folks that are now piggybacking on what you found out?
Well, there's a few things going on here. First of all, when Congress asks questions of a department or an agency and they have these hearings, it's political theater. It's not really a legal process. It's kabuki. It's a kabuki theater. It's a political pushing and shoving match. When we ask for documents, we do so under the law, right? There's a legal framework for our legal, for our request for records under the Freedom of Information Act law. And then when they fail to comply but with it, we go to court and we get a federal judge to compel the agency to comply. That's wildly different than the Congress sending notes back and forth to some government agency. No self-respecting attorney in the Department of Justice or in the General Counsel's office of some of these different departments and agencies is going to commit perjury in front of a judge. They're not going to lie about it. They will tell Congress to drop dead, and they do so with relative impunity. Look at the Attorney General who's been held in contempt. What has that meant? Nothing. So our legal process is frankly stronger than the political process exercised by Congress. Part B of that answer is, first of all, there's no leadership. Boehner's a joke. He's been compelled and pushed and shoved into creating this select committee months and months and months down the road when it should have been done right away. And then other folks like Issa, who do good work, unfortunately only have the attention span of a six-year-old. They get their sound bite, they get their one hearing where everyone's held to a five-minute rule, and then they're chasing after the next bright, shiny object. They have no staying power. They have no long-term concentration and ability to follow through.
We go to the phones. We go to Mark at 580KIDO with our great friend Christopher Farrell.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, Chris, this is something that I've been wondering why the media has not covered more, and they seem to be covering up, and I have to say it, even Fox. October 10th, Rayburn Building, congressional hearings, Dennis Kucinich. You can find this on a liberal website on the YouTube video, Salone.com. He was asking in front of the panel of Eric Nordstrom, former senior regional security advisor, Ambassador Kennedy, Charlene Lamb, senior state official from the State Department, and Lieutenant Colonel Andrew Wood, former commander of the special security team. He asked the question, how many shoulder-launched surface-to-air missiles were sent over there to Libya under the Obama administration prior to the rioting over there? Nobody answered the question. Finally, it took Eric Nordstrom, after the third attempt by Dennis Kucinich to ask this question, he came up with, sir, between 10 to 20,000. That's what they were over there to try to get. The Obama administration has allowed these to go through the Al-Qaeda pipeline, and they're going to be used for a future event. And I wonder why this is not coming out in any of the media.
You've really hit the nail on the head. That's what all of this is about. When you ask yourself, why was Ambassador Stevens in Benghazi? Well, he was there to meet with the Turkish ambassador. Well, why? Well, because there were shipments of weapons from Libya on Libyan freighter to Turkey's southernmost seaport, where arms were then transshipped over to Syria to support the what I think are very dangerous, very nebulous collection of so-called rebels fighting against Assad, some of whom may be good guys, but a lot of them are probably crazies or probably Al-Qaeda militant lunatics, and very dangerous lunatics at that. So that is the backstory to Benghazi. And and it goes to the motive in all this. And you, sir, hit the nail on the head.
That was a motive, sir.
$40 million program by the State Department to gather up man pads, which essentially are shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles like Stingers, okay? And that is what's behind all of this, is this gun-running operation. And so if you think about it, long back up to the 100,000-foot level and look down on this all, the thing that the Obama administration was terrified of 6 weeks before the election was a headline that would read, Obama administration arms Al-Qaeda. That is what they were absolutely terrified of, and frankly, they still are afraid of. And so that gives the relevance and significance to this entire thing.
Had this been a Republican administration, you know darn well you had had the far-left media out there, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, calling for impeachment of a Republican president if this had happened under the Republicans. And I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I'm a constitutionalist. But we have the most deceitful, traitorous scum that are running the White House and are destroying our country from the inside out. Great saying by one of our famous founding fathers, the greatest enemy and threat to this country would come from within. They're right here in our front door. Thank you.
All right, Mark, thank you very much. Chris, please hang on. More coming up as we talk more about Judicial Watch and their great work and the Benghazi email fallout. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Let's get you to work on time and safe.
On Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, Chris Farrell joining us from Judicial Watch. So what do you expect to happen now that you've caught the administration red-handed?
Well, a few things. Of course, they're going to squeal and they're going to start lashing out and doing all they can to deflect attention and generate a lot of double talk and attempt to minimize or you know, marginalize these very hard and fast findings. The beauty of this is that this is not one person saying, oh, I saw this or heard this. This is all documentation. This is all paperwork, email trails and trains connected together. They can't get away from it. It's a very sticky story in that regard. Congress is going to do what they're going to do. Trey Gowdy looks like is going to be the chair of the select committee. Whether the Democrats decide to participate or not, I think, is irrelevant because a smart spokesperson or media person for this committee should be able to spin it either way, right? If they don't participate, then they're obstructionists and they're afraid of the truth. If they do participate, great. Let them mix it up and get in the middle of the committee. So I don't see it hurting or helping either way as far as the Democrats' participation in it. I think Gowdy's probably a good guy to lead this up. I think he's probably has a strong prosecutorial sense and drive, good line of questioning. I'm always reluctant or hesitant to put too much faith in congressional committees, but given the current circumstances, this is certainly, I think, a step forward to getting some real answers.
Hey, here's something on an unrelated topic, because we could go on and on about Congress and the marginalization and the politicization of this, but as a person that loves the military, as a former service member, as a veteran, Chris, what do you make of our new friends, the Iranians, now have threatened to sink U.S. carriers? I'm glad we got rid of the sanctions there.
Yeah, I mean, this is just insult to injury. We're drawing down the military. From a very close friend of mine, practically a brother, who is currently in the Pentagon, a colonel. There's an active purge underway to eliminate all the battle-hardened leadership. There's a litmus test for general officers, for all flag officers of any of the services. That they've got to promote the Obama social engineering agenda with respect to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which, of course, is now gone. But all the issues concerning homosexuality, concerning women in combat, all these novel new applications of social theory that have been applied to the military in the last few years, there's a very aggressive politicizing of the flag officer corps. And if you're not going to if you subscribe to the last 230 years of American military history, tradition, and accomplishment, you're out. It's just that clear.
Chris Farrell, what's next for Judicial Watch?
It is never ending, my friend. Yeah. I got to figure out something to go after in Idaho. I want to come out there and visit you guys. So send me some tips on some corruption out there. I need to come out and visit. we have more on our plate than you can imagine, and we keep digging in. You know, we try to look over the horizon. We try to look at stuff that's coming up. We don't like to chase headlines. We like to make them, and we've just got a ton of work in front of us. At the same time, we can't let up on the stuff that is bubbling along, right? We can never let go of Benghazi, but I can tell you we can look at Mexican military incursions along our southern border. I mean, there's a topic that doesn't get much attention or press, but there are armed incursions by Mexican military forces and sometimes police forces into the United States for a variety of reasons, and that poses a very grave threat. We cannot ignore that, and we've been successful at doing that. And that's just part of the stealth amnesty that the Obama administration has granted. I was going to say going to, but they have. They've implemented a stealth amnesty. They've simply stopped enforcing our immigration law altogether. It's a free-for-all. If you can't maintain your own borders and know who's coming in and out of the country, the risk to our country is great. And all it takes is a dirty bomb and, you know, San Diego or El Paso or Tucson, and we'll be waving our fingers and, oh, how did this possibly happen? Who did this to us? You know, it's a real threat. It's very, very serious.
Well, we'd love to have you back, and we do urge people to Google Judicial Watch, judicialwatch.org. You guys have been doing great work for years, and this is outstanding. Don't believe the press narrative. This is a big issue that needs to get more sunlight. So thank you, Chris.
Great to be out with you. Thank you very much.
All right, take care. That is our friend Chris Farrell. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's go to our great friend Jennifer Kuiper of Fox News Radio. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So it's been a while.
Yeah, and we have quite an interesting story out of, it involves an Indiana man who is appearing in a Michigan courtroom this afternoon. He went from raising daylilies, award-winning daylilies, to running cocaine. And now at 90 years old, today is his birthday, he is going to be sentenced for being a drug mule, so basically hauling cocaine from one state through several to where he was finally caught in Michigan. He started in Arizona, ended up in Michigan, and it was a routine traffic stop in which cops found bricks of cocaine in his pickup truck. And now Leo Sharp will stand before a judge today, and he'll find out whether he'll have to spend time behind bars at 90 years old and how much time. So
how do you describe this story?
Well, it just keeps getting better because not only was he, he had farms in Indiana and Florida, and he was raising these daylilies, which were, again, award-winning daylilies. He's also a decorated World War II vet, has a Bronze Star. And so the prosecution took that into consideration. They said, listen, you know, due to his age and his service, we are still recommending that he go to prison, but instead of the usual minimum 14 years, they have recommended 5 years. But Sharp's attorney says this guy is old, he's sick, he has dementia, and it was just an aberration. I mean, it was just something, he just made a mistake, and prosecutors say no. This guy did not make a mistake. He knew what he was doing. He was greedy. He was paid more than $1 million to do it, and he had been doing it not just this time, but quite a few years.
Boy, that's a lot of time, though, to be put away when you're 90.
It is. It is. And his attorney says, don't put him behind bars. It's going to be too costly. Where's the guy going to go at this age? Just put him on home confinement. And he's offered also to give up his farm in Florida, but he says he wants to keep his farm in Indiana. That's his home. And he has also, I think it was, I want to say $500,000 is what he's agreed to pay the government. So his lawyer is going to be bringing all of that up today in court. And it was kind of interesting during his last court appearance when he pleaded guilty. Leo Sharp stood in front of the judge and basically had to get really close to the judge saying, I can't hear you. What? I can't hear you. But he claimed that because of his service and because of the explosions that were taking place that he was close to, that it ruined his hearing. So it was kind of interesting to see him in court.
I mean, I guess this is just what were the feelings of the prosecutors? They wanted to send a message, huh?
Well, they did, but I mean, you know, you run drugs, it doesn't matter what age, and I think that they're sending the message that you can't, just because you're old doesn't mean that you can break the law. And just because you're young, you can't put drugs on your kid and try to get your kid through an airport with them or something like that. I mean, you're going to get punished if you do that. And I think that's the message they're trying to send here. But like I said, they did say, we know this guy is old. We know that he has served his country. But at the same time, he did something wrong and he knew he did something wrong.
Well, you can't use the old excuse that, the dementia and everything else. I wonder if this is a pattern nationally where you have older people doing this.
Well, it could be. I mean, he claimed he needed the money, but the Fed say no, you didn't need it. He may have needed money, but he was just being greedy. This is a lot of money, although I believe somewhere along the line he also said that he tried to get out of it but was told, you can't. There's no way you get out of this. And I can understand that, too. I mean, once you're in this kind of a lifestyle, it's not easy to get out, and they have you. You know, once they have you, they have you. It's pretty interesting that I guess when he got pulled over, he was just like, well, shoot me now, because what you're going to find in my truck isn't good. So, and then they found all that coke. And, this is a decision that he made or was forced into. And when he was asked about it, there was a Chicago TV station a while back that did an investigation, and he said on tape that he knew that it was coke that he was hauling, that he was aware of that. And he basically talked a little bit about the cocoa plant where the cocaine comes from being kind of like daylilies that he grew, saying that, they make people feel good. So I'm sure that's being used against him too in court.
Well, you know what they say, anything they can will be used against you.
Now, there you go. Absolutely. So they have it all. And again, the recommendation is for a 5-year sentence, and he's 90 years old. Today is his birthday. And his lawyer is hoping that he won't have to spend any time in prison.
I see. Well, Jennifer, we appreciate it. I'm trying to come up with some witty or pithy comments here, but I'm the story is just so fascinating.
Well, it is, and it's one of those stories where it just gets stranger as you go, because you're like, well, wow, he's a senior citizen, and now he's running drugs, and he's a decorated war vet, and I mean, and he was raising champion not just daylilies, but award winning daylilies. I mean, this story is just really wild.
What's next when you think about these things? But I love the daylilies and everything else. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I never ask what's next, because even though it's like, wow, that is really strange, then I think, well, why does this surprise me?
I still like the idea of once they have you, they have you. I mean.
Try to get out of, I could tell you
I was
going to
say this,
my husband's.
The voice of experience here, Jennifer.
Well, I married a man who had a grandfather who was involved in the senior side of things way back in the 40s. And
really, Chicago, seedy side? Never would have thought of
that. Yeah, there you go. A little bit of mob background is what I was told as the story went. So
you were in the mob?
I was not in the mob, no.
Well, that's what everybody says, Jennifer.
Yeah, well, you take one of his men, he puts one of your men in the hospital, you put one in the morgue.
I know. This is I love it when you're...
It's one of those family lore that, got busted doing something wrong, served the time, got out, and didn't go back to that lifestyle, and is one of the few that didn't. So is it true? I don't know. I never met the man. So he was long gone before I came around.
You didn't want to swim with the fishes.
Yeah, well, So that's what I'm told, is that it's unusual to get out of the seedier lifestyle.
I was just
going to.
I got
to
ask you quickly: is it true, like, if you go see the Don on his daughter's wedding day, he'll grant you a wish?
I don't know. I haven't. Interestingly, I married an Italian man, and I grew up in a family that was half Italian. So,
right.
And honestly, I had a bigger family than he did. He only has about 5 people in his family, which is almost unheard of for Italians. I mean, mine's bigger, not much, but it is bigger. So that's it's kind of interesting. And by the way, my family is Northern Italian, and I married a Sicilian. So, you can imagine.
Don't mess with the Sicilians.
Yeah, well, when I told my grandmother, I'm like, Nana, I'm getting married to a Sicilian. She's like, oh.
Not good for you, Jennifer.
No, and anybody who knows that kind of background knows that, you know, the northern and the southern, they just don't get along. So, but they all have good food.
Jennifer, I have to let you go. I'm hungry for lasagna right now.
I know. So. I threw so much at you there.
You have a good day.
You too. Have a good one.
All right. Our great friend Jennifer Kuiper joining us. Kevin Miller in the morning. It is 40 degrees in Boise, 648. Let's get you to work safely.
Sean Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
And there you have it, Bill Clinton, some of the greatest hits of the 90s. Boy, I miss that, and miss Monica Lewinsky and everything else. Monica Lewinsky's back. Well, tell you about that in a minute, but right now, why don't we give you a chance to win tickets to see the Steelheads tonight. You've got to swing in here now at the Broadcast Center at 580-5436. 580-KIDO, you've got to swing in tonight before 5 o'clock, before the big game. You're going to win a pair of tickets to see the Steelheads against Alaska, caller 10 right now. And it's just our little way of saying thank you at 580-5436. So caller 10 wins a pair of tickets to see the Steelheads. And, you know, what lessons have we learned from Monica Lewinsky? Well, we had Ken Starr. We had, by the way, I do recommend a wonderful book. I can't remember the author's name, but it's called Death of American Virtue. And in it, you have the author who is the only one who has talked to Ken Starr, who has talked to Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky and Linda Tripp. And he tries to give you an entire picture of how it all played out. But here you have Hillary Clinton. It goes back really to Rand Paul's comments with David Gregory. You remember snarkly, snarkly David Gregory, who was trying to pull the gotcha on Senator Paul when they were being interviewed. And then he started talking about Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and whether or not it matters that Bill Clinton had his, in his private life, cheated on his wife. Of course, it was never about sex. It was never about the adultery. It was always about perjury. And you take a look at someone, and I said this well before Bill Clinton was ever elected. How can you trust someone who is going to cheat on their spouse and then tell you that you can trust them when it comes to telling the truth? And if you have that fatal flaw to begin with, how can you trust them to run your corporation? And I love what Senator Paul said about this was, look, if this had happened anywhere else, and what does it say about us that our highest office in the land has lower standards than some of our entry-level jobs? I mean, really, think about it.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, he went back to work all right for the American people. However, getting back to this issue, you have people across the country that if they had done what Bill Clinton had done, they would have been fired. And then you take a look at Hillary Clinton, our incredible Secretary of State. By the way, what good has she done as Secretary of State? Russia is going crazy. China is going crazy. The Middle East is a disaster. Syria is a disaster. Benghazi, we could go on and on. Why should we elect her? Because she's a female? Because she was the first lady? I mean, we thought that the president had a weak resume before he was elected. What's really her claim to fame? She ran, was elected, and reelected in the state of New York? Does New York State, New York City, really represent Idaho values? And coming up, we'll talk a little bit more about Hillary Clinton. Coming up, we'll also talk about the high cost of gasoline and saving the A-10. Let's get you to work safely. 6:59, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Coming up next, one state is taking a look at taxing you per mile you drive. And it's a voluntary program. Should we have that here in Idaho? We'll talk about it. Plus, saving the A-10. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Serving Emmett, Idaho.